We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Daniel, did you ever want to be an astronaut?
Well, yes, but I didn't because I'm terrified of the danger and the adventure.
A little bit scary?
Yeah, I'm not ready to travel into space until it's safe and routine.
Yeah, it is pretty dark and scary out there, but isn't that kind of the point of space exploration? To sort of go out there and discover and find new things, hiding in the darkness?
Yeah, and I want other people to go out there, take those risks, and then I can just read about it in the newspaper.
Hi, I'm Jorge. I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel Whiteson. I'm a particle physicist and I'm a stay-at-home adventurer of the mind.
Couch explorer.
I like to explore this vast universe from the comfort of my office.
But welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we take you on an exploration of all the amazing, crazy, bonkers, beautiful, nasty, crazy, weird things in this universe. Did I say crazy twice? That's because the universe is that crazy.
It's double crazy.
I feel like the things we're learning in science every year, every decade, every generation are crazier than the things we learned before. It's not just that we're learning more, but the stuff we're revealing is just more bonkers than anything we could have imagined. Don't you feel that way?
Well, do you think it's crazier than what we thought it was before? You know, is it crazier than Greek gods and Norse mythology?
Well, I think it's maybe less creative, but it's definitely crazier. Every generation has had to absorb ideas which were very difficult to swallow because they completely conflict with our view of the world. You know, the universe is expanding. There is no sense of location and time. You know, things are fundamentally random. Space curves, like these are hard things to get your mind around, and they get harder and harder as we discover them.
Yeah, we are not the center of the universe, and the universe is not like what we see around our where we are.
Yeah, and every time we look out into space, we discover new stuff, weird stuff. Places we thought were empty turn out to be filled with interesting, fascinating, weird kinds of matter.
Yeah, because that's kind of the history of humanity and science, right? Like, we look around and we assume that the whole universe is kind of like where we're at, right? We thought the world was flat because everything seems flat around us, and we thought that the Earth was the center of the universe because everything seems to revolve around us. But then as we learn more, we learn that there are more and more different things out there.
We keep learning that the assumptions we make, that the generalizations we make about what we learn here cannot be applied everywhere. And that's the exciting part. That's the moment of discovery when you realize, oh, I thought the universe was this way. It turns out it's actually totally different in a way I never imagined. We are intellectually maturing as a species by discovering our universe and coming to grips with it. And it's not always the way we liked it, but it turns out to be quite fascinating.
Today on the program, we'll be tackling one such idea that, you know, maybe a lot of people even today think is true, but actually it turns out to be much more complex than that.
That's right. The darkness out there is more filled with interesting stuff and rocks than you could have ever imagined.
Yeah, it's stuff that's out there hiding in the darkness.
Other worlds out there looking at ours and wondering, what would it be like to be so close to a nice, warm, toasty star?
Yeah, so today on the program, we'll be tackling the question, are there planets without stars? And not just movie stars, right? We're talking about, are there places in the universe that don't have a sun or a star near them?
I like the one you asked, though. Like, are there planets out there with only B and C list actors?
That's right. Where everyone only has 5 seconds of fame.
You can only be in one movie and then your career is over. It's like That's term right. limits for Hollywood actors.
Oh,
I
man.
Like that.
That's great. Wouldn't that be great if we got rid of celebrity culture in our society?
Yeah, well, that won't appeal to any of our celebrity listeners, you know? So, hey, Brad Pitt, don't worry. You can still come on the program. But
no, apparently it works. If you speak badly about somebody, they'll want to come on our show then.
That's true.
To defend themselves, maybe, to grab any kind of publicity they can.
That's true. Stay tuned for our episode in which science fiction authors come on the show and respond to our critiques. And when we're thinking about the broad universe, you know, you are used to thinking about your planet as having one very important feature, which is the sun. And every time you think about a planet, you imagine, well, planets form around stars, right? And so it's a bit mind-bending to imagine that the universe might be different.
Yeah, a lot of people might be surprised to learn that not every planet out there is centered around a star.
You may be shocked to discover that rogue planets are not that rare, that the universe may be chock-filled with these floating dark bodies.
Yeah, and that's the official physics name for them, right? Like a planet without a star, it's officially called a rogue planet.
Yes, but you will not be surprised to discover there is some controversy about what exactly gets called a rogue planet.
Oh, wow. Physicists arguing about what to name something? That's so rare.
Not only arguing about whether something is a good name, but like what exactly falls into this category. You know, the whole Pluto, like, is it a planet? Is it not a planet thing? That's this same controversy writ large.
Interesting, because I guess everything is sort of being pulled by every star in the universe. So technically, there isn't a planet that's not being pulled by a star.
I like that. You're sort of saying every planet is part of some solar system, even if it's sort of distant from its star.
Right. Well, technically, right? Don't all solar systems sort of overlap with each other, technically, because the force of gravity is infinite, has infinite reach?
Yeah, that's true. The force of gravity is infinite. But at some point, the force of gravity from these stars is basically negligible. And there's essentially no effect on these planets. And they're more affected
negligible.
By the... Yeah, negligible. They're more affected by the mass of the galaxy. So I think the distinction is, are you orbiting a star or are you orbiting the center of the galaxy?
All right. Well, I was a little surprised to find out that there are rogue planets out there and that there are apparently not just a few of them. But we were wondering how many people out there knew this same fact that there are planets out there in space without stars.
So I walked around campus at UC Irvine and I asked folks what they thought and if they had a guess for how many rogue planets there might be in the universe.
So think about it for a second. How many planets out there in the universe would you guess are out there floating without a star? Here's what people had to say.
I have no clue how many there are. My guess understanding from what I think I know is that they're, by one way or another, something flying by, they end up ejected from the star that they're orbiting.
I have not.
Do you think those exist?
Sure, why not?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine that that would be not true.
Okay, so
honestly.
You think like a lot or just like 10?
I would have no idea how to give a number.
Okay.
I would actually have to say probably a lot just because gravity is so, you can get a star really close to another set of planets, mm-hmm. and then it throws them off in space. Mm-hmm. So probably a lot.
Probably?
I think so.
You think there's like 7 or like a billion?
Oh, geez. Well, in a big universe, I don't know if we could count.
No.
You think every planet has a star?
I think so.
Oh, interesting. Pretty good mix of reactions.
Yeah, a lot of open minds. I love the people who say the universe is so big, you can never say no. You can never say that something doesn't exist. I think that's a great attitude.
I see. Because technically, in an infinite universe, anything can happen, right? And anything is happening.
Yeah, in an infinite universe, everything that can happen eventually will happen and is happening somewhere. So it's a good attitude. Now, we don't know the universe is infinite, but it's definitely pretty big.
Right. Somewhere out there, there's a version of this podcast in which you and I are the A-list celebrities.
That's not that this planet. Version? What are you saying? I don't get it. Hold on a second. I'm confused.
I think we run out of letters.
We're the triple Z celebrities.
That's right. We're the triple A. We're triple A celebrities, which sounds good, but really, it's probably not.
Welcome to the minor league of podcasts, folks.
Yeah. So, but people seem sort of skeptical. I mean, some people said yes, but it sort of seemed like yes, probably, but probably it's probably not very common.
That's right. And it's immediately a fascinating question. It's the kind of thing you might not ever think about. You think, oh, well, planets, of course, they form around stars. And that's reasonable because stars form from the gravitational collapse of stuff and planets do the same thing. And so you should imagine they form together. They're probably associated with each other. You probably don't ever think that there are dark bodies floating out there in between the stars. But as soon as somebody suggests it to you, then you have to wonder, well, do we know? How do we know? Have we looked? Could we see them? And immediately it's a question you need to know the answer to.
Yeah, because if it's a lot, then that would be pretty interesting, I guess, or dangerous. Because what if one of them hits us?
Yeah, it's a little bit dangerous, but also it just changes sort of your view of the universe. I mean, what if there are more rogue planets out there than non-rogue planets? Then your whole view of like what is a planet has to all of a sudden change from, oh, they're all around stars to, well, my sense of a planet is unusual, is atypical.
Oh, I see. It could be that our kind of planet is the minority.
Yeah, exactly. Just like we discovered that our kind of matter is a small fraction of all the matter in the universe. All of a sudden, things we thought were typical are now weird.
It'd be like discovering there are more continents out there.
Yeah, or you know, you grow up and your family eats a dinner a certain way, and then you go to a friend's house, you discover, oh man, my family's weird. We don't use utensils at home or whatever it is, you know? It's maturing in that same way.
Right, it's expanding your horizon and your idea of the universe.
And that's why this is such a fun opportunity to learn something new about the universe.
All right, so let's get into it, Daniel. What exactly is a rogue planet?
Right. So let's begin with technical definitional stuff that we could argue about easily for a half an hour.
Right. and very importantly, is there a first rogue planet called Rogue One?
Well, the movie rights for that one have already been locked up, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're definitely not making a sequel of that one. So maybe we should start with Rogue Two.
I liked it. But, you know, Rogue Two's agent is not exactly getting a lot of traction in Hollywood. Mm. But a rogue planet is a planet that's not orbiting a star. And you said earlier, and you were right, that every planet feels the gravity from every star in the galaxy. But you have to look at its motion. Like the motion of the Earth is that we are orbiting our star. We are moving around our star. But if we were a rogue planet, then our primary motion would just be around the center of the galaxy. We'd be in the same category as the stars. Like our star orbits the center of the galaxy.
It's a planet that's not sort of trapped by the gravitational well or pull of a star.
Yeah, we like to think of a solar system as an object because it's gravitationally bound. That the dominant gravitational force on every object in the solar system is the sun. So it's like the sun has its own little neighborhood in which its gravity is more powerful than any other gravity.
Or I guess maybe not just that it's more powerful, but it's powerful enough to sort of trap things in its vicinity.
Yeah, it's a stable
state. It doesn't let it go.
Exactly. But you know, the galaxy is big and there are a lot of stars, but they're not that many. And so there's a lot of room out there between stars. Remember, we are, you know, light years away from the nearest star, which makes a huge amount of space for stuff to be floating between the stars.
Oh, I see. So there's a lot of room for you to be out there without falling into the, you know, the trap of the gravitational pull of a star.
Yeah, if you map the Milky Way onto Earth, for example, you know, you'd have like one house here in Los Angeles and another house like in Kansas, another house like in New York City, and there'd be a lot of room between those.
That you could rogue around in.
Yeah, you could have a rogue cabin in the woods and never have to get close to anybody.
And I guess more importantly, you could be so far away from my house and your house in Kansas that you wouldn't feel the need to sort of go visit.
Yeah, and you could largely ignore them, you know. Those stars would just be other slightly more bright stars in the sky. And you wouldn't feel their gravitational pull strongly enough to get sucked into one of them.
All right, so then what's the definition then? That it's a planet, meaning like a ball of stuff? Is that what it means? What is exactly a planet?
Yeah, well, that's where it gets tricky, right? These are either things that were formed in other solar systems and then ejected, or you could also think about stars that never sort of got started, like failed stars. You know, what if a star never sort of turns on because it's not big enough to burn? Is that a rogue planet or is that a failed star? It's a heated debate in astronomy, but both of those things are out there.
Well, in a way, sort of, isn't Jupiter also kind of a failed star? Like it could have been a star, but it wasn't.
Yeah. And if Jupiter had formed far enough away from the sun on its own, if it was like the center of its own little gravitational neighborhood, we would call it a sub-brown dwarf star. But because it formed around our star, we call it a planet. And so there's a lot of energy spent in astronomy arguing about these names and definitions. And
wait, you're saying that if Jupiter wasn't in our solar system, mm-hmm. if it was out there, it would be considered a star, even though it's not burning?
Yeah, there's a whole category of stars called brown dwarfs and sub-brown dwarfs that are just not big enough to ignite fusion and to burn and to glow.
But why still call them a star if they're not ignited and burning?
See what I meant? People have strong feelings about this, like you do apparently. In your mind, you think if it's got to be burning to be a star, right? Well, other people think, oh, you know, it's a failed star. That's a kind of star.
All right, so that's kind of the definition. It's a ball of stuff. Or maybe the definition is kind of fuzzy. But generally speaking, a rogue planet is a ball of stuff. It could be gas. It could be rock too, right? Rocks or gas or, you know, it's compressed matter kind of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to make it different than a cloud. And it's floating out there in space, not in the orbit of a star.
That's
whatever
right.
That could mean also.
That's right. It's a dense blob of stuff primarily orbiting the center of the galaxy instead of orbiting another star.
All right, let's get into how we can see them, even though it's dark out there in space, and how many there are out there in the universe. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Physicists are famously sticklers for detail. And when it comes to the fine print contracts and hidden fees from wireless providers, I've learned that there's always a catch somewhere. So when I heard that the Mint Mobile wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, where's the catch? But now I'm convinced there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online, so they cut out the cost of retail stores and they pass all those savings directly to you. Personally, I love using Mint Mobile. The calls are always crystal clear. So you can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities. But it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com to start living yours. Let's get into it.
All right, Dino, there are floating planets out there in the universe, in our galaxy, that don't have a star. They're called rogue planets, and there might be a lot of them. So first of all, I guess, how do we even see them if it's they're not burning bright and they're not near a star for them to shine? How do we know they're there?
It's tricky, right? These are dark objects. They are not shining. They're not emitting light. And as you say, they're not close enough to any star to reflect light. Like exoplanets are. So it's not easy to spot them, which is why for a long time, we didn't even know that they existed. But there are two ways to see them. One is you get really lucky, and one is close enough that we can see them in the infrared. Remember, these things are not burning, so they're not shining visible light, but they still have some heat to them. And everything in the universe that has a temperature also radiates some energy, usually in the infrared. And so it's sort of glowing in the infrared. And we have infrared telescopes.
I see. Because I think we're used to thinking of like asteroids and things out there in space as being cold. But you could have, for example, like the Earth is kind of warm by itself.
The Earth is kind of warm. And even if we were 10 or 50 Kelvin, and I want to give props to the person out there who wrote in to remind me that it's not degrees Kelvin, it's just Kelvin. But even if we were just 10 or 50 Kelvin, we would still radiate. Everything that's above absolute zero radiates some energy. It's called black body radiation.
Oh, I see. It sort of shines in the infrared.
Yeah. And there's a telescope called the WISE telescope, W-I-S-E, which is really good at seeing this stuff and is really good in the infrared. And so if it's close enough, then you can spot them directly with the WISE telescope. But it has to be pretty close.
So like if our sun suddenly went out and there was no more light in our solar system, you could still maybe see the Earth and all the other planets.
Yeah, you could, precisely. And we do this to study other solar systems. We look at them in the visible light, and we also look at them in the infrared to try to get a glimpse for like, what is the stuff out there that's not glowing? It's still there. It's giving off different kinds of radiation. So we have lots of different ways of looking at the sky. The infrared, X-ray, radio. These are all just different kinds of light, though. They're all just different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. But different things out there glow in different parts of the spectrum. So the most direct way is to look for them in the infrared. But they'd have to be really close by.
Oh, I see. Because otherwise it would be too faint to see them.
Yeah, because these things are small and pretty faint, and so they're pretty hard to spot. The best way to see these things is to look for a little star eclipse.
What?
Well, if you have a big dark object somewhere out there in the universe and it passes between you and a star, then what happens? It blocks the light from that star momentarily.
Like a one-time eclipse.
Yes, like a one-time eclipse.
One-time ever eclipse.
One-time ever, yeah. And so you can see these things if you very carefully watch all the stars in the sky and wait for a blip. But there's something really fascinating because you might expect that like a star eclipse would dim the star, that it would go out for a minute and then come back, right? That's what you'd expect. But there's this really weird gravitational effect. If the rogue planet or whatever it is, alien ship is big enough, then it has a gravitational lensing effect. It acts like a big lens in space because remember, gravity is the bending of space. So gravity can change the direction of light.
It won't just block the light. It'll bend the light. That sort of happens here on Earth too when there's an eclipse, right? Doesn't the light sort of go around the moon when it's blocking the sun a little bit?
It does a little bit, yeah. And in this case, it could actually enhance the strength of that star because it acts like a lens. It gathers more light and it focuses it all on the Earth. So what actually happens when you get a micro lensing event, they call it, is that the star gets brighter.
Not just darker or darker and lighter.
Yeah, it actually gets brighter. It gets enhanced, right? It gets amplified by this micro lensing. And so the very center of it is blocked out, but you're gathering light from nearby and focusing it onto the Earth. You actually get more of the starlight when it goes by.
It's an eclipse that makes the star look brighter.
Yeah, precisely. It's really fun. And the telescope that sees these things has a really awesome name. It's called the Ogle Telescope. O-G-L-E.
No.
I'm not making this up. Not making it up.
I thought it was already too much to have a Weiss telescope, W-I-S-E. But no. This one, want to look at thing is called the Ogle.
If you want to sit on the couch and ogle the universe, and you do it using the optical gravitational lensing experiment, Ogle.
Wow. You guys probably popped some champagne when you came up with that name. So those are the two ways you can see them. You can see them either through microlensing or anti-eclipses or directly through the infrared. And so what do we know about them? Do we know, are they sort of round like our planets necessarily, or do they look like giant asteroids, or what do we expect them to look like?
Yeah, we expect that they're mostly round because anything that's big enough, gravity will make it round. You know, gravity is powerful, and if you got a bit that's sticking out, eventually it's going to roll down. And so you have something that's big enough to have strong gravity, it's going to get round.
Oh, I see. And you expect these to be big, right? I guess if you're calling them planets, there's a certain size associated with that name, isn't there? Like Pluto got demoted because it wasn't big enough.
Yeah, but the really amazing part is that probably there's a whole spectrum of sizes from like things bigger than Jupiter down to Earth-sized things, down to just rocks. And the number is probably inversely proportional to the size. So there are a certain number of Jupiter-sized ones, and then probably more Earth-sized ones, and then probably like a gazillion times more just rocks out there.
But at some point, they're just called rocks. You wouldn't call them planets, right?
At some point, they're called planets and then dwarf planets. And then, yeah, just comets or rocks or dust, right? And, you know, some of these things have come through our solar system. Remember Oumuamua and the comet that came through in December of 2019. These are just rocks from other solar system that flew through our solar system.
Wow, there are Jupiter-sized planets out there just floating in space, not being bound to any star, just doing their own thing?
And that was the question. When people first thought about this, they thought, are they out there? Let's go look for them. And so they started using these two approaches, and what they found sort of boggled the mind.
Right, they found more than they expected?
Yeah, they found that there's something like around one Jupiter-sized rogue planet for every star in the Milky Way.
So there's hundreds of millions of these Jupiter-sized rogue planets out there.
Yeah, more like 100 billion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because there's about 100 billion stars in the Milky Way. And a few years ago, there was a really exciting result. Some people said that there might be like 2 to 4 Jupiter-sized rogue planets out there for every single star. So like hundreds of billions. And everybody was like, reacted just the way you did, like, what? And then another experiment did some measurements and they came back and said, everybody calm down. It looks like there's probably just about one Jupiter-sized rogue
planet.
Only
one.
And I was like, that's still crazy. I mean, I was thinking like there might be 10 in the whole galaxy. Turns out there's billions and billions of these things. And those are the Jupiter-sized ones.
The Milky Way is littered with these.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And if as you go down the mass scale, right, like Earth-sized planets, there might be 10 or even 100 times as many.
Wow. It's just traffic out there.
It's pretty messy.
Space is littered with stuff being thrown around.
Nobody's cleaned up, right? We formed all these solar systems and all the leftover bits are just still out there. But you know, it gets more and more uncertain. As the size of the object we're talking about gets smaller, it's harder to see. And so we've seen fewer of them. So we're making more of an extrapolation with more uncertainty. We're in early days of understanding this. And in 5, 10, 50 years, we'll have a much better handle on it. But right now, it's pretty uncertain.
Are they going to keep on floating out there, or will all of these planets eventually kind of fall into a star?
Think about what happens when a big Jupiter-sized planet approaches a star. It's not that easy to fall into orbit. Remember, orbit requires being in the right location, having the right direction, and the right velocity. Much more likely is that you come into a solar system and you just sort of like mess it up. You perturb, blow
through it.
Yeah, you perturb the gravitational, the nice, cozy gravitational orbits of everybody that's been there for billions of years, and you make more rogue planets. Like, you come in and you bust up a family. If a Jupiter-sized planet came into our solar system, we would probably lose a planet or two.
Well, I hope it's not Earth. They can take Pluto, Neptune. You know, we don't even care about those.
Wow, they haven't even arrived yet, and you're already at the negotiating table offering up our neighbors.
What has Uranus done for me lately? Come on.
Oh, come on. It's comic fodder. Uranus, really? I would give away Neptune first.
Oh, I see. It's less funny. I see. You want a planet around you can make fun of.
Yeah, exactly. Some right. Planet has to be the butt of all of our jokes.
So, okay. So it's not likely because if they're already floating out there, you know, careening through space, it's unlikely for them to stop at any particular star. They'll just kind of bounce around from solar system to solar system.
Mm-hmm. It is possible. It's possible for our star to capture a new planet. And people wonder about the history of our solar system. You know, like some of our planets have weird orbits. Is it possible they were captured? But if you just shoot a planet at a star, most of the trajectories will lead to it just being like whipped around and shot out into space and probably losing some of its planets.
I guess then that gets us to the question of how these planets even formed if they are not in a solar system and they can be captured by a solar system. Where did they even come from? So let's tackle that question. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities. But it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, Intuit.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so where do rogue planets come from? Is there like a rogue planet factory somewhere? Is there a rogue nation of planets where all of these planets go rogue from their rogue nation?
Well, it depends on how you define a rogue planet. There's a big population of them that were probably formed around a star. Just like Earth and Jupiter and all of our planets, they were part of some big cloud of gas and dust and rocks which coalesced to form a star and planets. But remember, that's not like organized. Nobody planned our solar system. And so in the early days of our solar system, stuff was pretty chaotic. It's not like everybody had cleared it up and say, everybody in this lane become Earth and everybody over here. You had stuff sort of bouncing around more. It was more disorganized. And so stuff got ejected. So some planets that were formed in the early days of our solar system probably got ejected and are now out there as rogue planets.
Yeah. We have a lost brother out there or sister?
Yeah, we almost certainly do. And it's a
almost certainly.
We it's a fun question to ask, like, what fraction of planets end up in stable orbits and what fraction get ejected? And, you know, we're looking at our solar system billions of years in. It's basically after everything has settled down. You know, in our solar system, people think, for example, like Saturn and Jupiter might have once had different orbits. They might have been in a different order.
I see. Because we had more things.
Yeah. And that there was a third planet, another icy giant, which got ejected from the solar system. Like, you look at the organization of our solar system for clues and you're like, this looks weird. You know, it would make more sense if this crazy thing happened. And that's how we ended up with this configuration of our planets.
Oh, interesting. That's right. Because the solar system didn't always look like the solar system.
No. And remember, Earth had a massive collision with like a planet-sized object, which led to the formation of the moon. Where did that thing come from? Well, probably our solar system. And now it's been obliterated.
Okay, so that's one way you can create a rogue planet out there in space. It's born in a solar system along with other planets, but then the other planets sort of get together and kind of vote that planet out.
That's right. Planet survivor. But you know, from that planet's point of view, they're probably like, I never wanted to be in a solar system anyway.
Okay,
so much more exciting out here in the backwoods.
I see. It's much cooler out here.
It is much cooler out there. And it could also be, as we talked about earlier, that something comes by and perturbs a nice stable solar system. Like a black hole comes near a solar system and perturbs it and sucks out some of the planets. Or even just, you know, another passing rogue planet. So solar systems are not that stable.
So those are rogue orphan planets, I guess you could call
them. Yeah.
But then you can also have like true rogue planets or like independently formed rogue planets.
Feral planets, maybe we can say.
Yeah. Native planets.
These are the ones that you were saying don't really count as a star. And they're called sub-brown dwarf stars. And they're just clumps of matter that started to form together, but didn't get enough to form enough gravitational pressure that you would get hydrogen fusion at the core of it. And so you never start to burn.
Right, because you could just have dust out there and gas and just have it, if there's nothing around it, it'll just come together as a clump.
It will come together as a clump. Eventually, gravity wins, right? Gravity is so weak, but so patient. And it just pulls this stuff together, whatever you started with. And, you know, you might wonder, like, how does that start? And that's a whole other fascinating topic. People think there are these clouds of gas and dust and maybe like a supernova shockwave passes through it and that triggers the coalescing. Anyway, we'll talk about that in another episode, but whatever you got around you forms into a blob. And if it's not bright enough to burn into a star, then it becomes...
To ignite, to start fusion, right? That's what you need.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you just have a rock out there, it's not enough to start fusion. You need enough mass that the gravity sort of takes over and you start that star. And then it's basically a sub-brown dwarf star.
Oh, man. I'm just going to pass judgment right now, Daniel. I don't think they should be called stars.
All right.
Just call them sub-brown dwarves or something.
So would you call them a rogue planet then?
Yeah, right? An independent planet or, yeah, why not? Argument against calling them a rogue planet?
Well, some people think that, you know, a planet is something that formed around a star. And so then a rogue planet, I think the generally acceptable term is that a rogue planet is something that was around a star and then got lost. It went rogue. You can't be born rogue in astronomy, apparently.
I see. If by planet you mean something that forms around a star, then technically...
Technically,
something that doesn't form with it around a star is not a planet.
But this is all semantics, right? This is just what people decided to call this thing so they can have words that they communicate with and all mean the same thing. Or maybe they just like arguing about this stuff at meetings. That's probably true also.
Or maybe what you mean by star is just like celestial objects, then this could be sort of a non-shining star.
Yeah. And these things sort of go the same way as the rogue planets. That is, when it comes to stars, we know more about bigger stars because they burn bright and we can see them. It's hard to spot brown dwarfs and sub-brown dwarfs because they don't shine like stars. We think that the number of these things grows very quickly, though, as you dial down the mass of the object from bright star to sub-brown dwarf to just dark little blob. So there's a lot more sub-brown dwarfs out there than there are burning stars.
There are more failed stars than stars. Is that what you're saying?
Big surprise, right? There are more waiters than celebrities in Hollywood.
Wow, the analogies just keep on rewarding us here.
It turns out what we've learned here in Los Angeles does apply to the rest of the universe in this one case.
LA is the center of the universe, obviously.
It has taught us something about...
It's a template for the rest of the universe.
That is terrifying. That is terrifying.
All right, cool. So it's pretty interesting to know, to understand, to have a sense that there are giant planets out there floating in space without a home, you know? They're just cruising through space like a spaceship, I guess?
Yeah, and you have to wonder, like, what would it be like to stand on the surface of that planet? It'd be perpetual night. You'd have no seasons. You could do a lot of great astronomy, right? Because you have no sun to interfere with your telescopes.
You could have a walk around that planet, go all the way around, and you would only see the night sky with stars in it.
Yeah, but you could stay up all night long every night.
You would never get a sunburn.
That's right. I never thought about that. That industry would just not take off.
Fail. Yeah. Good for astronomers, bad for Procter & Gamble.
Yeah, and also makers of swimsuits probably. Because, you know, it'd be pretty cold, right? We rely on our sun not just for sunlight, but also for the warmth. And it provides something like 99.97% of the energy on the surface of the Earth comes directly from the sun.
Really? But aren't there planets in our solar system that are like super hot by themselves? Or is it also from the sun?
There are. Like Venus is super hot, but all that energy comes from the sun. And the reason it's super hot is that it has these thick clouds that trap that energy. So all the surface energy from all the planets in our solar system is almost all from the sun.
But that's on the surface. If you wanted to live on the surface and have a view of the night sky, but technically could you... In one of these rogue planets, could you like evolve life inside of it where it is warm?
You might, because as you say, the core of our planet is warm, and that's not from the sun. That's from the gravitational pressure, right? The Earth is also being squeezed and melts the rock, and from the radioactive decays that are happening inside that rock that radiates a little bit of energy. And so there is, you know, there are hot spots underground. And so if you were on one of these rogue planets, say, for example, the Earth went rogue, right? What would happen? Well, their oceans,
not good,
right? You throw away all your sunscreen. Sorry about that. And the oceans would freeze and the atmosphere would like turn to snow and just like accumulate on the surface of the Earth, which would be crazy. But if you go down deep enough, there would still be warmth. And so there might be enough energy sort of bubbling up through the crust to keep like a layer of water melted.
Oh, interesting. You could have like underground oceans.
Yeah, you could have underground oceans. The Earth would be covered in a layer of ice, but a mile or maybe 2 miles down, there could still be water and it might be warm enough to sustain life.
Oh, I see. So you would throw out your sunscreen, but not your swimsuit.
That's right. Take your swimsuit or maybe your wetsuit, because I don't think it's going to be very warm. But you could find like, you know, cracks in the Earth's mantle underground where there's geothermal energy. And there is life at the very bottom of the ocean clustered around these thermal vents.
Yeah, and they don't have any sunlight. They just live off of the hot water from these vents.
They've been planning for this for a long time.
Yeah, they're ready for Earth to go rogue.
They're the rogue life, right? They're ready to take over when Earth goes rogue. They are waiting to rise up.
But I think what I was saying is that could happen on one of these rogue planets out there. I mean, there could be like a giant floating Jupiter out there in space that's actually like a spaceship full of life under the surface.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that life evolves on a planet and then it goes rogue. I think you're saying like, could life evolve on a planet when it's rogue? And I think the answer is yeah, you could have liquid water on a rogue planet and life could evolve, and it could evolve under like a mile of ice and never see the sky, right? It might not even be aware that the universe is larger than its ocean.
It'd be like rogue life.
Yeah, and you have to wonder like, what kind of technology could you evolve? Like, could you become intelligent? Could you evolve technology? Could you drill out of the ice and then discover that? Imagine what that would be like to be that kind of... I want to read a science fiction novel about life that evolves on a rogue planet and develops the technology, drills out of the ice, and then discovers, oh my gosh, the universe is so much bigger than we ever imagined. What a moment, right?
There is a story, you and I were talking earlier about the writer Doug Chiang. He has a story, I don't know if you read it, called The Tower of Babel, where that's kind of the plot with it. They drill through the ceiling of heaven.
Oh my gosh, I want to read that story. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, all right. So that's kind of possible, is that there are, and there are so many of these rogue planets out there that it probably is maybe possible that there is life and that life started in one of these rogue planets.
Yeah, it's very exciting for the possibility of alien life, which you know I'm a fan of. You know, recently we've learned that there are a huge number of planets around other stars. That was a big moment just in astronomy in general, but also for us who promote alien life, to realize that there are other places for life in the universe and around other stars. That was exciting. Now we're learning that that's a tiny fraction of all the planets out there and that there's an enormous number of these dark rogue planets. And I think it's more challenging for life to form on a rogue planet. But hey, you got more opportunities also. So.
Right. There's like 100 billion rogue planets the size of Jupiter.
Yeah. And maybe 10 to 100 times as many Earth-sized planets out there.
Right. And just so, in our solar system.
Just
in our galaxy. Sorry.
That would be getting kind of crowded. Just in our galaxy, yeah.
I mean the galaxy, there's hundreds and hundreds of billions of these, and maybe there are hundreds of billions of galaxies, so who knows, right? There could be a rogue life form out there.
My money is that there is. I mean, it just seems so much more likely. It seems so impossible to imagine that nowhere out there on any of these planets has life begun. There's so many opportunities and so many ways for life to happen we haven't even imagined. I would definitely put my money on there being rogue alien life.
Can you imagine them bursting out of their shell and be like, whoa, what is this?
Even crazier, though, is that like one of these rogue planets could pass by our solar system, you know, within a few AU, you know, just outside the edge of Pluto, and we wouldn't even see it. And they might not even see us. And so we could be like, there could be like cosmic neighbors zooming by and we're not even paying attention.
And maybe, just maybe, this happened a few billion years ago. And maybe, just maybe, an asteroid hit that rogue planet and ejected a piece of rock with life that then landed on Earth. All right, I'm taking it too far.
No, I like that theory a lot. It's totally possible. It's possible for life to have originated somewhere else and then come to Earth.
All right. Well, that's pretty interesting to know. It sort of makes you look at space and the night sky differently, you know? In all those places where you only see blackness, there could be planets out there floating and possibly with life.
Yeah. And this life might not be looking back at you. It might be hidden under 2 miles of ice, looking up at the inside of its ocean and wondering what else is out there.
Right. It has no interest in being famous like a star.
Only because they don't even know it's possible. Once they get a taste of it, though, ooh, they're going to go crazy.
Oh, no. Once they discover television, it's all over.
Who doesn't want to be a star?
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed that little tour into the blackness of space and what could be out there waiting for us to discover.
And as usual, you are in no danger as you sit on your couch or sit in the seat of your car and listen to us helping you explore the universe.
All right. We hope you enjoyed that. See you next time.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge. That's one word. Or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. answer one important question. How did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.